Right. Hello, everyone. This is Homie and the Dude, episode 10. Episode 10. And this is actually walking podcast number 2.
It is.
So, we're actually trying some new equipment out today. This is a little new gimbalized camera called the Fimi Pong. I hope you guys like it. Let us know what you think of this new walking podcast
style.
I've been
desperate to try this bit of kit, and you've been nagging me for weeks. Because, to be fair, the DSLR is the way to go, but it was, it was a rig that was a little bit, let's say, jimmy-rigged, fun, heavy as hell.
Yeah.
But, so we're trying this. We're going to be bouncing around with different types of kit or whatever, but let's see how this does. Yeah, this is a new route we're taking as well. We're still in Bristol.
Going a different way today. We're not doing the harbour side today, guys, so doing a different one. Something we wanted to address before we get into the actual show is that me and Tom last time didn't wear masks for much of the show, and conditions and new stuff has come out about that in the UK. And so we're trying to be a little bit more vigilant. Tom's got his mask.
I do have my mask.
I'm not sure if you can see, and I'm wearing mine so that when we get past people, we're a little bit more prepared. So we just wanted to say, you know, I guess on my end, like, we fucked up on the past, like we didn't even think about it last time. I think it's important for us to rectify that shit and make sure that it's sorted for next time. Let's cross over quickly.
Yeah, I mean, especially, for me, it's for other people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's important for us and our own health, but when you're out and about, it's equally or more important for us to show respect to other people's health. So,
yeah, 100%.
Put that in mind. 100%. So every time we pass anyone inside a social distance, I'll be just putting it on like an oxygen mask, basically.
Today, guys, we're doing a little bit of a walk. We're doing a little bit of a talk. We're gonna see how it goes. Go for it, Tom. Shoot.
Ah, am I first?
You're first. Go for it.
All right, I gotta look at my notes.
So we've got some shit lined up for you guys.
We've got some topics, but we also have some questions that neither one of us have. We've both prepared questions that we're gonna ask the other person without any preparation beforehand. All right. So the first sort of topic I think would be good is just kind of what's going on with us. So I have a note here, skating for you and my Achilles tendon for me. Do you want to just talk about what's going on in your life right now?
Let's cross over quickly, get around this, Tony.
Yeah.
Just because I'm just getting trapped in by this guy. He's not walking very fast. So what's going on with me? I've been skating, so I've just come off a 2 to 3 month injury where I busted my ankle. I tried to do a pop shove it. For people who don't know, that's the board rotating flat and in like a circular motion, I guess. And I landed with half of my foot on the board, half of it off, and rolled my ankle really, really badly. So regretting that one massively. But after 2 months of resting it and putting CBD oil on my leg and doing a bunch of stuff, I finally got back on the board and my ankle's feeling fine. I can flick the board fine. And so I went to work these last week. I pretty much skated every single day as I do, but taking it easy because I know my limits as well. And I actually managed to learn a new trick. I learned how to do frontside flips, which is pretty incredible. It's a trick that I've wanted to learn since I was really young, since I first saw it in a video with Jeremy Way. I don't know. It's a big accomplishment for me, but it's definitely a big part of what I'm doing at the moment, I guess, is just skating as much as I can and progressing and trying to bring that exercise back into my life, because after weeks of not skating, it's hard to get back into the swing of things and make sure you're doing it every day. What about you?
Yeah, the exercise thing is huge for me as well. And when I don't do it, I start suffering both physically and mentally. So Tracy and I have been walking. We call it our walking workout up a hill. And I tweaked my Achilles 3 weeks ago. Anyway, I didn't do working out for, I don't know, about 10 days and started feeling like shit. Actually probably started putting on some weight and I'm back now, so I'm feeling better. I've actually been looking forward to this podcast for all week. It's been a hard, busy week. Let's see how we do here. We're trying to navigate around some city workers. Yeah, so I'm back. But yeah, so that's a little recap of, I guess, of how us coming off of injuries.
Yeah. So you're feeling good. Your Achilles is feeling better.
My Achilles is feeling better. It is not 100% healed, but we walked our... We have a huge hill where we are social distancing. For us, it's huge at least. And Tracy and I do it 8 times. It takes us about... Started out taking us about 55 minutes. We're down to like 45 minutes. And hadn't done it for 10 days. And so now I'm back. We did it today. We did it yesterday. And we're not doing it at the pace we were. I was running it, different parts of it. Definitely not doing that. And I think that was just kind of my ego getting in the way. And
is this definitely recording? I just want to make sure as well.
Let me see. Is it? Did you?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. There's the
mic. Sorry, guys. Yeah. Just tripping out on whether this is recording.
Yeah.
Continue with what you're saying.
Yeah. So, yeah. Other than that, yeah, just been super, super busy with both trying to build up the podcast, but also, you know, work stuff, whatever, that stuff. But
mask.
Yeah.
Mask.
Oh, thank you. Nice one. You might have to remind me of that. Thanks.
Yeah. To focus on remembering to put his mask up. but no, yeah. Fair. So, yeah, work for people who want to know as well. Just, again, what's going on. I just got semi-made redundant at the moment, so I'm looking for work while doing this podcast again. Just hustling, guys. It's just constant hustle. That's what life is. We know that. We work hard through it. It's what you fucking taught me. So we're here just going through that. Yeah, so I guess that's what's going on with us. Do you want me to follow up?
I'll tell you what, yeah, let's switch. Let's switch it up. We'll switch it with every topic. How's that? Go ahead.
That's probably loud.
Yeah.
That was probably nice and loud for you guys. Sorry about that motorbike.
Be great to get on a side street if we can.
Yeah. So, for me, a topic I wanted to bring up was, so Tom set us the task of writing some weird questions, and I didn't come up with weird questions, I came up with weird question. And my weird question is, obviously Jesus presented himself to the people, like he did so through many miracles, and that's what people made people believe he was the person that he was, right? So, for example, he walked on water. He changed water from wine. You know, he healed people. He did a bunch of these miracles. So my question was gonna be, if you were in Jesus's position, what would be your move to show to the people that you're legit? Like, what's your, like, are you turning water to wine? Are you walking on water? What would be your method of proving to the public that you are legit?
Yeah, so, I mean, what comes to mind immediately?
Quickly, before you get into it, by the way, my religious knowledge, I failed my religious studies, so apologies on that if that was not accurate. But in terms of just the point of the question, you get what I'm saying. Go for it.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying, and I'm particularly aware of what like doubters who would just be skeptical about just about anything and just like look at it as being a, you know, somehow faked in some way, or, you know, using, like, I don't know, film or Photoshop or staging or general magic to produce something. So you'd have to do something so outstandingly outside the realm of what we could produce as humans to fake something. So, I mean, there's so many ways we could do this. The immediate thing is maybe like levitate.
You know, I want to levitate as well. That's interesting. When I was thinking about the question myself, I was like, some sort of levitation act would be a really prominent one. Like, I felt like that would be a pretty cool way to display some godly power or something like that. I was like, you know, I think levitation would be a good one. I was trying to think, like, healing's obviously always a classic. bike, everyone goes with the fucking heel someone.
But you'd have to like literally line up a bunch of people that are really close to death for various reasons, right?
Yeah.
And just start like laying hands on them and watching them pop up and do like, I don't know, jumping jacks and somersaults and like, you know, like Cossack dancing and stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. But yeah, or like, I don't know, feats of strength.
Feats of strength. Also, that's another good one. Maybe like lift a car or like a bus or something. Okay. I like a feat of strength. That's not one I thought about, so I like that.
What about feats of incredible skill?
I'll tell you another one that I thought as well.
You know the guys, what are they called? The guys that do all the trick shots?
So.
The guys that do all the trick shots.
Oh, Dude Perfect.
Yeah, Dude Perfect. So literally like, but see, that's the thing. Like Dude Perfect is not probably gonna work because people will be like, oh, faked. They manipulated that in post. So, what about straight up?
I've got one for you. Human Transformation, John Jones style. As in John Jones being from the Justice League cartoon.
Not John Jones, the MMA fighter.
Perfect. Let's go, all the way. But yeah, I think, a transformation, some sort of like, you morph into some other being or replicate someone else or something like that.
Yeah.
And you morph into that. Here, if you want to trade.
Yeah.
Here, pass it over. But yeah, so, all that kind of stuff, I think, like some sort of transformation would be really cool. I think, again, for me, I'm thinking about what causes the most belief in the shortest amount of time. I'm thinking about efficiency, dude. I've got to get through a world of people and make them believe that I am possibly the Messiah, return of Christ or whatever, you know, or the Son of God.
Without breaking your back, without like...
I don't need to put like, I need to move fast. It's like Santa. He doesn't have time to sit and chat and have all these cookies. You know there's people eating the cookies for him, like...
It's a really good point.
Shit, I just realized I fucking filmed in fucking life.
You were?
Fucking terrible filming just then. Jesus Christ. Sorry about that, guys. Filming my fucking waist.
So like a seismic event that you could produce that the world could see it. What about...
Some sort of elemental powers.
Yeah, dude. What about straight up like outrageous like fire creation? Or like what about just splitting... Like what about the old classics? Splitting the sea and just walking through like the middle of...
Oh, I love that one. Yeah, actually, that's a great one.
It's a good visual. Like it's hard to replicate that in post for any, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, CGI, I guess, could try to do it.
Yeah.
But... what else? I mean, okay, so let's actually get to the point. The reason why we're having to be so outrageous is because the world has gotten to the point where no one believes anything.
That's true as well. Yeah, at this point, it has to be something. You can't just turn water to wine these days.
No.
That's a good point. Water doesn't just turn to wine these days and people believe that shit. Someone questions it. Someone says it's fake news. Someone does this. Someone does that. But I think that's a good point. You know, like, if that kind of person was around these days, it would be very, very, very hard to convince a larger portion of the population to believe in your outer earthly abilities, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, video footage is a big seller these days, though, but people still go, oh, you know, it could be edited, it could be this, it could be that. So...
That's the problem, man.
I agree. I think...
Tell me when you want to make the tag, by the way.
Oh, I'm good for the moment. I think that is a problem, dude. I think, interestingly, it's why it's hard for anyone, even the, and I'll be careful when I say this, the, I guess, good people out there in the world that are fighting for the right things and try to make change happen in the right places and all this kind of stuff, you know? For those people, you know, I think needing people to believe you and needing people to be on your side is a big, important part of that. And with what's happening in the world, it's so much harder to put people... Again, what is good, what is bad? It all comes down to that whole philosophical bullshit. But at the end of the day, it's really hard to get people on your side these days. Like, it's really hard to fight that thing. And I don't know whether that's something going on with society or whether it's going on with...
God bless people, Bristol, man.
There's people just shouting in the windows next to us, by the way.
Literally from one window to the other.
Amazing.
I think we were just made accomplices to some sort of like illegal thing that just went down.
That was literally just two people shouting from one upper window to a lower window. That was amazing. But yeah, no, I think it's a weird one in today's age in terms of belief. And again, I'm even as someone, I mean, I'm not anyone important, but I'm super conflicted in what I believe these days. I'm like, I get evidence from one thing that tells me one thing, and I get evidence somewhere else that tells me the opposite. And it's then trying to find that middle ground of like taking information from both sides and realizing that both are probably inaccurate, but yeah, both will allow you to find that kind of center point, you know?
Dude, you can go from something that is super important, like climate change, and there's everyone, like if you dotted the spectrum, you have people all along the spectrum from complete ends. One end saying like the world is going to end soon, the other end saying like it's all fake. Then you go to the extreme, the absurdities of is the earth round, and you have again representation across the spectrum, because the concept of fact is now being questioned. Like, what is a fact, right? That question is now being picked. Like, prove to me that facts are facts.
Yeah.
Okay, well, like, where do you go from that? Like, okay, well, there's scientific method. There's ways to test things. There's ways to double blind things. There's ways to
get secondary evidence to reprove, to continue proving or whatever.
But if you don't believe any of that, then like, then we do get to the point of, well, yeah, I guess your opinion's as good as mine because nothing is provable. And that's the problem right now. So yeah.
That's a good point.
So yeah, like back to Jesus, like,
I think honestly it's a really good point, dude. I think, you know, in terms of we are now at a place where no one knows what to believe, and thus you can't prove anything as well. I think that point of not being able to prove anything is something that's scary, because going to your weird simulation theory that you have and that a lot of people seem to share, is that that kind of seems in tune with starting to make us question our own reality and reasons why anything is right or wrong or fucking, you know, and that then starts sending the human mind into this really interesting observable spiral. Do you know what I mean?
Dude, I don't even know if, like, it starts becoming very, very difficult to, first of all, to talk to anyone that is of that, I don't believe it. I don't know what to believe. It's all bullshit. Like, first of all, there's different levels of bullshit. So for me, yes, some of it is clearly bullshit. But if you just put it all in one camp, you're kind of fucked, right? As far as trying to problem solve things.
Yeah.
So there's different degrees of good arguments and bad arguments. And that's the only way you can sift through this and find out, like, if Jesus really exists right now or not. Like, is that levitation real or not? Okay, how close am I to it? Like, is it just on film? How many people witnessed it in real life? Like, you know, and you start going through this whole, you know, sort of fact-finding.
Stop.
And you come out the other end with making your decision. If you can't do that, if you're just like, well, fuck it, it's all fake, so I can choose to believe it or not. Well, okay, but we don't have nowhere to go. Like, our conversation has nowhere to go to establish who is more right, what guides us to being more factual, more true, in anything, right? If you stop believing whether the earth is round, like that fundamental thing, then we got a problem.
Yeah.
Like, how are we gonna believe, like, does that mean we need to talk about whether the sun exists? Does that mean we need to talk about whether, like, just like very basic shit. Like, is this car real, you know, or is it a simulation, like, in my mind right now?
Yeah, this way. Yeah, no, I think it's a really good point, and that's what I mean, is like, for humans, we're in a very scary time, you know, in terms of dealing with this whole prove it to me fucking culture, you know, like, show me the clip, bro.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, show me more than the clip. Like,
oh yeah, that's where it's at this point.
Show me the raw footage. Yeah. And now, like, let me, like, there's no end to it. Like, cause okay, you showed me the raw footage. I still don't know if I believe. Show me the camera.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I still don't know if that's the camera, so prove it more to me. Okay, I'll take you to the location, and I'll show you three other angles that we took. All right, go ahead. Well, you could have replicated that. You know, it's just like forever. You can never, like, get around the, I don't believe it.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what, like, It's a really hard one. I don't know where we go to solve that. Honestly, like I'm trying to come up with some sort of idea in my head of like, you know, this is how we solve that problem. This is how we, you know, this is how we make that better. But I'm like, I'm really coming up short in terms of trying to come up with the idea of how to do that. Because again, how do you prove that this is a good idea?
What about Jesus getting into the octagon with like every champion of every weight class and just flinging them around and eventually flinging them over the top of the cage and then levitating Dana White and like bringing him in and twirling him on his finger and then like, I don't know, doing like a little break dance.
doing the Israel Adesanya intro.
Yeah.
That's over again.
Maybe it's the absurd. Maybe you have to do something that's so ridiculously absurd that people are just like, okay, well.
You have to go Jim Carrey kind of level of crazy.
You mean on like The Mask or that type of shit?
I mean, just like his level of general craziness, just to be noticed.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird, dude. Like, I think also just, you know, and actually a really nice segue is going into the future. I'm not really sure what holds in terms of how we're going to solve a lot of the issues going forward. Now, the segue that I want to make is I actually have been watching a TV show called Westworld. I'm not sure if people are aware of it. If not, go check it out. It's made by Jonathan Nolan, one of the Christopher Nolan's brother, basically one of the two Nolan brothers, and a lady called Lisa. I don't know her last name. And it's a really, really good show that I was not on board with when I first started watching because it was painfully hard to get through a single episode, because it's just so complicated and so many different intersecting plot lines and lots of craziness in that way. And I think eventually in season two it like unravels a bit more and you learn a bit more and blah blah blah. But the whole premise of the show is that there's an AI host being that exists within our planet. Now, this kind of goes on to a question I wanted to ask you of also kind of following my point earlier about Jesus and like what would you do, what would be your like ideal tech for the future? Like, so for example, in this they all have like an earpiece with someone that they can talk to, like a Siri or an OS that they can converse with. They also have like security systems for the house that they can converse with. Like, there's automated aircrafts, all this kind of shit in the show once they leave into the real world and are out of Westworld, basically.
Yeah.
And so I guess my question is, yeah, go for it. My question was more, what do you think is the, like, what would you like to see in the future? What would be an invention that you kind of are like, if I could live for the next 50 to 100 years, I'd love to see that.
Such a great one. I mean, for me, like, yeah, there's some, like, cool things that would be awesome to be able to experience, like, some really gnarly VR stuff would be really, really cool.
I agree with that.
But I come back to like, and maybe this is because of my age. Something about a bit of technology that helps us all. This sounds so cheesy, but be more like empathetic with each other, or be a bit more like able to understand, like, I don't know, maybe it's like this thing. So you see people walking down the street and you see their whole story, right? You don't, so, you know how when you walk down the street, you have preconceived notions of people,
yeah,
right? You were creating stories about them. And oftentimes, if you're fortunate enough to actually talk to them, you find out how ridiculously wrong you've been,
yeah,
about that person.
You mean some sort of technology that could give you, fast forward you to the good bits and leave out all the prejudgment kind of shit?
Yeah, maybe not even like, yes, the good bits, but also the real bits, like who this person is. Like, you get like the quick bullet point dossier of a person that just illuminates itself as they're walking by you, right? So you see the most difficult thing they've ever gone through, the happiest thing they've ever gone through, like just, you know, kind of like basic human things, like how they're doing, like literally emotionally how they're doing. Like there's maybe there's like a fuel gauge, right? And the happiness fuel gauge is, you know, let's say they're at a medium and physically, oh shit, they're like at an empty. They've been really like either burning the candle at both ends, or
yeah,
they don't have a place to sleep or whatever.
Okay.
Hardest thing they've been through.
Okay,
so that's mine.
Let me pose it. Well, let me build on that. Let me pose you a question. obviously that there's a lot of data issues there in terms of in true. Terms of your sharing
GDPR.
Yeah, like well this is the thing, is like, would people come on board with the fact that you are sharing so much data with other people just in one-to-one interactions? I would say no.
With strangers, probably not.
I'd say typically no. Most people probably wouldn't be on board with that. So I guess for me, I get it, but also the question I was then going to pose based off of that was, is all technology going to being data fluid almost, as in everyone will be able to access all the data or larger chunks of data through, whether it be chips that allow you to access the internet through your brain, or, you know, your method where it's this some sort of...
You know, it's like the Iron Man overlay, that screen thing.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Like some sort of hologram that pops up as you walk by
Correct.
Someone.
Yeah.
And you can choose to read it or not.
Yeah.
But also, I'll throw this out there. Come into the street a little bit more. Does that not ruin some of the mystery of things like dating and things like that? Like, you don't always want to know every fucking single thing. Like, you don't want to meet a girl and know that, you know, the worst thing that's ever happened to her is X. And it's fucking awful. Like, you want to be able to build to her trusting you enough to be able to tell you that. Do you know what I mean?
It's totally a fair point.
Like, this is what I mean in terms of data, like, breaching. Like, you crush human relationships while trying to make them easier and less judgmental.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting kind of way to look at it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you crush the organic unfolding of getting to know someone through a natural rhythm of... You know, the layers of getting to know them. Like, the first conversation is very different than the fifth, and then the tenth, and then, you know, then you become slowly like, you know, homies with each other at some point, whether it's a partner or it's a friend or even like a work colleague or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get that. Okay, well, what's yours?
Mine would be, honestly, I've thought about this a lot over the years, because it's like, if I could somehow.
Remember that hill that I was talking about that I go up?
Yeah.
This is very similar.
I need to make sure as well that we're on the right route at some point.
Great.
Well. But I'm pretty sure.
This is Bodhi's the navigator right now. I've never been to the destination we're going to, so.
Yes, the destination will have a really beautiful view for you guys.
So yes.
Stick around until the last little bit of the video to see an amazing view.
What a little marketing hook, man, that basically, like, look, we're not going to drop the real, like, the climactic scene till the very end.
and it just so happens that that's at the end of our walk. So let me get back to my thoughts. So about with technology, I've always gone augments are more my
kind of
game.
You have. You can't like, wait to get like Will Smith in iRobot augments.
I mean, yeah, like pretty much. I mean, here's the thing is when you get augments, it allows us as humans to become super. Like, this is the thing. I don't want full AI immersion. But assisted human abilities, such as things like, for me, again, being a skateboarder, having robotic legs that don't take shinners, that are incredibly accurate with their movements, like, all that kind of stuff would be amazing. Obviously, it would eventually lose the gimmick of skating, because the part of fun of skating is falling over and not landing the trick.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, like, imagine also just climbing abilities with robotic arms, or even eyes, like things where you can then see things further away. You can, you know, read things in different languages because your eye is tuned to it.
Does it take the satisfaction of achieving hard things away slowly?
It's a good question. Like, I was just thinking about that as I said it, and I was like, oh, I even regret my own statement. But I think in some ways, maybe, but in other ways, I think it just means as a human race, we will evolve in terms of our skill abilities. Like, the Olympics would become a whole nother thing. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the Olympics would be whoever has the best lab behind them. Almost like Formula
One.
Oh
my God, it'd be that like, would be incredible.
Like, the Mercedes lab is sponsoring Usain Bolt's cousin, who is running the 100-yard dash.
God.
Last time he ran it in 4 seconds and you know, 0.3. And, the problem is he tore up the track, so we've now had to establish a track that is a little bit more durable so that his velocity of his sprint speed doesn't actually do damage to the track. And we need to now, like with Formula One, they literally have to limit the technology. The technology can go faster than Formula One allows right now,
yeah.
Right? So they have to limit it to be like And still enjoyable by for human consumption, right? Yeah. So it's not just like ridiculous. And it's kind of the same with like performance enhancing drugs. Like you got someone that's really, really tapping into it, a la Lance Armstrong, and he wins 7 Tour de France's in a row. At some point it just gets boring unless they're all on it. And then you're just rooting for the person who's better at tweaking the chemicals.
But so, you know what's interesting? I love the whole Olympic fucking F1 style. Like, imagine the events, the discus throw. Think of how far you would have to measure that motherfucker, dude. Like, it's going to be a beast of a fucking throw.
The high jump.
Oh, my God. Like, but this is what I mean.
That would be entertaining, though, wouldn't it?
That's what I mean, is like, yeah. Oh, sports would be spectacular. Think about handball. Like, the sport of handball is, I'm going to dare to say this, a little bit boring in some cases I found when I watched it, but I imagine with a like piston locked arm that can like fire a ball at like 50 miles per hour.
Super accurately, but at a goalie who has the twitch speed of like, you're like a super, super human, like, or like just robotic, way, way above the fray. Reflexes,
yeah.
And they're battling against each other. Does that get boring after a while? I think,
but dude, then at some point it just gets even more advanced. Like the technology gets even crazier, and like, don't get me wrong, that just makes it even more nuts.
Here's a real example for us to consider. Right, so a little while back, you and I and Sam were playing NBA 2K.
Yeah.
Right. I went downstairs to get a snack, like I always do, and you guys got into the settings.
And tweaked it,
so that a couple of your guys, who was it, like John Paxton or someone,
crossover.
Literally had his three-point...
Jamal Crawford.
Had his three-point shooting accuracy at 99%, which means, like, he might miss. Like, if you shot it from half court, he might miss.
But he might miss if I inbounded the ball and shot.
Yeah, like... Yeah, or like you just caught it, like facing away from the basket and just flung it up. He might miss, but otherwise he's making it. And for a bit, you guys enjoyed me getting frustrated with that and questioning you and watching you guys lie to my face over and over again, saying, we don't know what you're talking about, Tom. But after a while, it was like, for you guys, it must have been a little bit like boring to just like put it into Jamal's hands and be like, all right, ta-dink. Three-pointer.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, for sure.
Oh, nice.
Guys, we're going down a very cool path right now.
Nice.
This is into the fray.
Do you know this one?
Yeah, this is, I'm pretty sure, the route that we're meant to take. So okay. we're into the bush now, guys, going down to the area that we're wanting to go, which is pretty cool. Your speculation is that it would become boring eventually because we would become too augmented to the point where at some point we would just be robots. Like at some point the full conversion would happen, you know?
Yeah, perfection would just get boring. It would be, you know, there's something about us not being perfect, whether it's in a sport or, you know, technology like a car or something like that, that there's glitch factor that will allow for us to be intrigued about what happens next. And I think we just get, a little bit like desensitized to that. But here's the thing. If you got any more points on that,
go for it.
So this kind of goes into my next one.
Cool.
So the next one is, right, so you talked about augmented humans and basically getting to the point where we are in effect replicating some, if you want to call them superpowers or that type of thing. Here's my contention. Today, right now, and since the emergence of animal life on Earth, there are superpowers that exist. And animals, different animals, have different incredible, like, superhero-like superpowers. And I want to fucking, let's talk about some of the most cool animal superpowers. Okay.
Give me some thoughts. Like, cheetahs running stupidly fast.
Cheetahs can run from 0 to, like... 70 in like faster than most. I mean, I guess technology will catch up to that.
But it already has. It's already massive.
All right, here's another one. Those big octopi.
Yeah.
That can fit into a hole like that.
That's true. That's a fucking weird membrane kind of thing.
That's a fucking killer superpower. What about the chameleon that can do the John Jones thing, basically, right? They can just like blend into their background. Or the octopus. Is it an octopus or a fish
both,
that can do
both, it? It's, there's a few different species of a few. I think there's a fish that can do it. Octopus can kind of do some blending. And also, obviously, chameleons can. Or charmeleon. if you want to be posh. They definitely can also change color and like almost become the background, I guess.
Yeah. Another one. Me and Mom went to, what do you call it? A falconry.
Okay.
And we stood with our backs to a falcon. And this thing is like, I don't know, 100 yards away from us. And the trainer gives the signal. And we have the fully leather landing pad on your arm. And dude, the silence that you didn't hear up until the moment those fucking claws dug into your arm
was
ridiculous. Like, it was, there's no sound. So that's like ninja level silent ability.
So, okay, that's an interesting one. So I've never experienced a bird actually landing on me, which is really interesting. To me, also, what could you feel, snakes going up and down things? Like a snake going up a step and like locking its like back muscles into place so that it can like go upwards. Oh, dude, the animal kingdom has some weird ones as well. Like in terms of just weird evolutions that allow things to do amazing things, like monkeys with their feet and their tails to be able to hang and swing and do all this kind of stuff.
I mean, Spider-Man was made from the derivative of the tensile strength of spider webs, right? Like, so at some point, is Stan Lee that did Spider-Man?
Yeah.
At some point, he probably was given the fact that the spider webs have this incredible, like, superhuman-like strength to them. And he's like, wow, that would be cool. Let's just make a spider-like superhero, the Spider-Man. Another one I was thinking of, if you could, you know how they say ants are really, really strong?
Yeah.
For their size? What if you could, like, enlarge an ant to the size of a human? How strong would that fucker be?
That's another thing, dude. Like, I mean, if you do... I posed to you this question earlier. How many ants does it take to lift a fridge? But like...
Mom said 5, and I dispute that.
No, I definitely dispute that as well. But like, what I would say is, though, it's definitely a good question, because if ants were bigger, like, they would be a terrifyingly powerful, because for their size, they're so much stronger. Yeah, dude, I don't know. That, like, this is what I mean, is it's that old question of, would you rather fight like 10... duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck? You know, that stupid kind of shit. And like, to me, it's like, I don't know, man. That's why, I mean, I'm glad that it is the way it is, because we're at the top of the food chain for the moment.
With our weapons,
that's a good point.
Or weaponry.
Until bullets and all that runs out, which eventually at some point it will do, because of just metal and ores and gunpowder and everything. Till that down a little bit more. Nice.
Yeah. You good?
Tilt towards you a little bit more as well.
So that was another one of mine.
I like it, dude. Like,
Mom came up with one.
Go on.
She's like, at the end of that argument about which animal or which living thing has the most superpower attributes, she said you should end with a bee, because without the bee, we'd all die. So the bee's superpower is to keep
the ecosystem going.
To keep the ecosystem alive. Which is actually not a bad one.
It's a pretty badass superpower.
And exactly.
You look as far as superpowers go.
Okay, hold on.
Hey.
But yeah, you know, I feel that, you know, it's definitely... Yeah, I don't know. With the bee, it's a weird one. Because also I go, as someone who is like partially vegan... And there's the whole vegan debate about whether bees' honey should be eaten and stuff.
Yeah.
I get a little bit like, I'm not sure which side of that argument I stand on, because I fucking really like honey. And also, I'm not sure. I'm uneducated on the topic. I would need to look it up. But I'm pretty sure, you know, it's a...
Oh, this is it?
Wow. Yeah. We made it to the spot, by the way, guys.
This is it.
We're just climbing to said spot now, and we'll give you a little...
I understand why it's called what it's called.
Yeah.
Is it officially called that, or is this just like Bristol?
No, it's officially, I'm pretty sure it's officially called that. But, Because if you search it, I'm pretty sure it comes up on Google. But I'm not sure. But nice. Anyway, guys, we are at the mound, which is a beautiful little piece of land up here where you have an amazing view of Bristol. Second. How do you flip this around, isn't it?
Three quick ones.
That is our view of Bristol right now, guys. I'm not sure if you can see that, but it's pretty badass.
Yeah, it's cool. Got like 360 pretty much, huh?
An amazing view. And Tom just chilling. Let's come back to here.
Should we get a spot?
Yeah, we're gonna go find a spot, sit down so we can finish the rest of this awesome podcast so far. Here, let's pop a seat on one of these little like bunions.
Oh yeah, those are nice.
Let's take this one.
Oh. Let's see if this thing can.
How's it going?
It's want to go.
No. So, in terms of the bee, yeah, and the honey kind of argument, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what damage it really does to them, but I would love to have an expert who knows a bit about that tell us a bit about what's going on there. So if you know anything about bees and honey, let us know. But I do know they're massively important in terms of pollination and other things like that.
Yeah.
I know that they make a massive difference.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's something that I think should be preserved. And obviously, as someone who is a vegetarian and believes in certain things, I'm also always down for the preservation of animals and things like that. So... I feel guilty about eating honey as I do, because I do eat honey currently.
But that can go into like an extreme. I don't know if I really want to go there, but like what defines veganism? You can really, really go super, super far to the point where there's questions about like, yeah, does it make sense to just go to that extreme? What's the point of like, who are the people that don't eat things that come out of the ground or something?
Oh, it's Jainism.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, whatever. Everyone has their own thing. So I get it. But well, here's the other thing on superpowers for animals. I'm just thinking of like, what animals have super amazing jaw strength? Like,
alligators have mad tensile strength when they bite down, but they can't open up really strong. They can bite down really
exactly
strong.
So that type of thing. Or what about, is it pythons or anacondas that can actually separate their jaws to get like,
yeah,
to basically consume a large, you know, whether it's like a goat?
See, to me, is that they just unhinge and allow their mouth to open really big? Or is it that the bone fully comes away from the other bone and then is just loose within the skin and then gets relocked into place? Again, another thing we need to do some research on. That's a good point.
These are all like superpowers that we don't really like consider. That there's animals walking around the earth right now that have them, right?
Yeah.
Birds, like what's that one bird that can go like 180 miles an hour? Like literally, there's some...
Like a falcon or something?
Yeah, but it's like a smaller badass bird that like when it points it's just like a bullet going through the sky. And we look at it and we're like, yeah, that's cool. But then if you put that like in a costume, you'd be like, holy shit, that's a superhero.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean. I like the point. Do you know what's another superhero in today's day and age? A superpower? Money. Do you know what's interesting about money? Do you know who has a lot of fucking money right now?
Who?
Fucking Kanye West.
Yeah, Kanye has. He's gotten into the upper echelon of like really having to consider like what, like how you want to operate in the world, right? Like, do you want to be the 1% of the 1% and just see how much power and influence and money you can accumulate while you're alive?
And do you know what's interesting is I think just in terms of the money superhero thing, before I go into Kanye as a joke, are you doing, Tom?
I'm trying to lift, sorry.
I think, you know, in terms of Kanye, he's a very unique person. I think he does some pretty amazing things in terms of musically, he's pretty genius, as is like, you know, pretty much anyone who does anything genius, typically anyone who's a bit obscure, typically is really good at something else. And Kanye's music, as much as people may criticize it or not like it, his production is exceptional, especially in his earlier albums.
Yeah, he's like, let's just like acknowledge that.
Yeah.
He as far as his music, certain parts of his music for sure, is genius, right? Yeah. It's like something that we have to admire in a way that, especially when he was doing some of that stuff, no one else was. Like, sure, people produce really interesting, creative things these days, but it is off the back, I would contend. A lot of it is off the back of what Kanye did early days.
Mm. And do you know what's interesting is I think, as someone who is an avid Kanye fan, or definitely used to be an avid Kanye fan when we used to listen to him when I was younger, I am really torn because of his now, how he is now with his personality, how he is politically. You know, obviously he says he's running for president and had that little crying spell the other day.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like I'm torn because I really love his music. I love him as a creative entity, but I'm not a big fan of his personality. And I think there's a lot of areas in life now that are being conflicted like that. You know, there's a lot of creative people that are having some either negative things brought out about them or are presenting themselves in a way that's a bit interesting, you know, outside of the work that they do. And it, you know, it starts making me go, you know, does this mean that I don't want to listen to your music? Does it make me like, how does it make me feel about, you know, what you're doing? And at the end of the day, I usually am really good at separating the like personal life from the art.
Yeah.
But I think with Kanye, he's one that I definitely struggle a bit more with in terms of just being like, oh, I listen to this music, and especially like as it's gone on, and you know, he's now getting a little, like his last album was very gospel, a lot more religious, you know. I'm just like, oh, I don't know what's, I'm not sure if I'm hearing the absurdness of what you do outside of music in your music more because I'm looking for it, or whether if it had never been presented to me, would I notice it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's like, it's something that you didn't have to think about even like 15 years ago, right? Or maybe let's say 20 years ago, because social media has unlocked private lives much more, and people are sharing more of their private lives. Where in the past, someone could be a total asshole outside of their art, and you wouldn't know it. You would just consume their art, and you'd be like, oh, that's amazing. And, you know, there's talk about, I don't know, like Picasso, who was not, I guess, a very nice person outside of his art.
Mm-hmm.
And others, like, you know, musicians, Johnny Cash was really volatile, I guess, and you can just go down the line. And now that's a lot more difficult to hide. Mm-hmm. And so people try to orchestrate, like, this persona, this image of themselves on social media, but even that leaks. And so Kanye's leaking all over the place, right? And we're having to, like, make decisions like, fuck, Kanye, like, I just want to enjoy your music or not. Like, I just want to just be interested in your next album. I don't really want to, like, can we just separate that? And you do, just do your album stuff. And it'd be great if I could just turn off the other stuff. And I guess I can, like, optionally, but it's hard to. Like, it's, you see a post come up on your newsfeed somewhere and there's Kanye doing something fucking crazy.
Right? You know, screaming at Sway or fucking crying during his presidential campaign. And, you know.
Yeah, it's like, come on, man. I there's a part of me that really loves you as an artist.
Mm.
Yet, the other side of it is, dude, like,
he's just living, and if he's living and he's doing his thing, like, how can we criticize? Like, it's such a weird, this is what I mean, is the more technology, going back to an earlier point, the more technology progresses, the more invasive it becomes, and the more judgmental we, interestingly, rather than being chill and being like, you know, oh, you know, this person makes a mistake, you know, Christian Bale shouts at a cameraman, he's having a bad day, you know, blah, 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 kind of thing. Instead, it's like, wow, that's them, that's their entire being, like, that one mistake will live with them forever, and that's their, like, do you know what I mean? And it's not, in some cases, it's not a career burner, in other cases, it is, but I think, to me, it's like, there's definitely this, like, weird perception at the moment of this technology is bleeding in and releasing all this stuff that, and what I mean is, like, you know, it could be anything from, you know, there's the classic Bill O'Reilly clip where he's screaming at the teleprompter and stuff.
I was thinking about that this morning.
Do you know what? It's
because,
like,
of this thing.
Yeah.
I was thinking this thing might screw up and we'll go into that same
fucking,
like,
thing sucks.
Fucking thing sucks. That's what I was saying last night about it.
And like, to me, it's like that kind of stuff is getting shown more and more. Like, that
is a really interesting thing that we're experiencing, and the way that we react to it as the public is even more interesting. A lot of it is a negative opinion from a lot of people. There's not much room for patience with that kind of stuff, I find, within society, it seems. Yeah, what would you say about that?
I think it's arbitrary as well. So some people are being canceled for things you're like, wow, that was like, it was pretty harsh what you said, but it was 12 years ago, and you know, you're losing things like now about it. And I get it. I understand that. Mm-hmm. But then you have someone else that seems to have almost like a free pass on doing some shit like today that they're,
I mean, like, for example, like Katie Hopkins, like just people who are prolifically like outright like racist and things like that. And like in public, and even like as far to go as just saying like some of the stuff that Trump says, just out in public and on Twitter and stuff like that. And again, I won't claim that he's a racist. I'm not going to get into that. But what I will say is that, you know, some of the shit that he says is bad. And there's people who are being, you know, what was it? Rian Johnson, one of the, wasn't it Guardians of the Galaxy guys, got canceled because of, I think it was,
yeah,
some, was it, I think it was a racist tweet or anti,
he was the writer or the director. Or
yeah. And it was a big issue with Rian Gunn, I think it was. And,
oh yeah.
And I like here, that's the thing, is like, how are some people allowed to openly express that opinion and be totally cool with it? And then other people are completely criticized for something that happened years ago.
So here,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's a weird one.
For me, like, the bigger question is, like, how can someone that is being canceled right now redeem themselves? Like, what's the pathway back? Because you can't literally... Like, I'm not for canceling someone and then, like, making their lives disappear, their profession, their standing with their family, with their kids. Like, well, it's not cool.
Here's what I would say.
I mean, I understand.
There's certain areas that it is definitely, that is the way that it needs to be. Like, with the whole Kevin Spacey and Harvey Weinstein, Jeffrey Epstein, all that. Yeah. That's one route. That's a different thing.
Okay.
But if it's like a minor Twitter comment that was made 10 years ago, I agree with you. That doesn't destroy, like, that shouldn't be destroying people's careers. If it's, you know, a joke that was done years and years ago, it's, you know, there needs to be room for.
I'm not saying let it pass. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, yes, let's arbitrate that was out of order whenever it was said, right? But I'm also suggesting there has to be a pathway back from that, whether it's public contrition, whatever it is, like, there's pathway back from crime, right? If you commit murder, your pathway back is to go serve a sentence for 20 years and come out, and now you are back in society. You have that as a smear in your sort of story, but you can come back and you can live a life and you can work and you can do whatever you want to do. And that's what I mean. There should be a pathway back for people to have a moment of redemption where they're like, okay, we're back, we're done with that. We've drawn a line under that, right? Can we now move forward? I don't see that right now.
It's also going, cool, well, maybe they said this years ago, and what if they've learned and changed since then? So, you know, there's things that I've said, like, I know I bashed vegans on Facebook years ago, and now I am a vegan vegetarian. And it's like, cool, so at what point does those comments back then not get redeemed by my actions now that I'm currently living, that I do day to day, that I don't drink, you know, this, that I don't eat that, you know, how can you qualify something that I've done years ago and learnt from and grown as a person from, and then go, well, you know, you said those, but even though you've changed now, it's you said it, so you, like, at some point it was a problem. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was part of you.
And, like, don't get me wrong, again, I get it. I really do understand it in some cases.
And we have to stand up for, like, out-of-order shit. I totally believe in that more than ever right now.
Yeah.
But that said, I also feel like, again, there's lines. There's different lines. So you're right. The Jeffrey Epstein stuff, anything to do with, like, harming people in a way that's, like, physical harm to people, I think.
Even emotional and mental harm.
Yeah. Like,
also, using power, like, anyone who's a celebrity who is within a position of, I guess, in some ways power because you have this draw to you, I think that's also an issue.
No, I totally get it. And it is, there's so many gray lines, so it is hard to figure out. But I do feel like there has to be some way to not just, you know, It's a lot of it as well. It's like, let's say it's the left. The left are eating their own as well. There's some really good people that are getting like chewed up and thrown out the other end for stuff that they did like 20, 30 years ago. Like someone had said a joke, right? Or, I mean, Louis C.K., let's not get too far into this, but he did some really inappropriate things. But there's levels, right? There's different levels.
I mean, I disagree with that, honestly.
Really?
I think Louis C.K.'s in with the Epstein bunch. I think he drew his card and it was fucked.
Okay.
I don't think there's levels to that stuff.
Really?
No.
Because Louis C.K., from what I understand, Louis C.K. was hugely inappropriate and unacceptable in encounters with women at a distance, and that's fucking horrible, right? And it probably scarred some people emotionally. I understand all that, but that is different than physically and like raping someone or doing something like that.
I disagree.
You do?
I disagree.
All right.
I think you need to check that. Okay. For sure. Like, I think some of that shit can be just as scarring. How can you deem what scars someone more than
that's
something
fair point.
Else? You know,
that's a fair point.
At the end of the day, you've got to think about this. You know, I had this conversation with some friends the other day. Just because you say something and you don't mean it with malice doesn't mean that the person who receives that comment doesn't receive it with malice. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that person might not be in a position to receive that. This person might not be. And dude, Louis C.K., what he did is not even close to, he is in that bunch 100%, and he deserves what he got, and he will continue to deserve what he got. But the thing is, dude, with Louis, he has drawn that line, dude. Like, he has done damage to someone mentally. That image, that whatever it may be, whether it was in person, whether it was over the phone, that will be a memory that is locked with someone for the rest of their life.
Yeah, I get that.
Irregardless of how much therapy or whatever, you know. The only thing that changes that is dementia, you know.
Yeah.
And that's not a fucking, you know, that's not a good way to have to fucking change some memories. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So to me, I disagree. I think.
Well, I think that what's really cool about this is that we're coming at this. So generationally, I'm behind the curve with a lot of this. So I'm catching up continually. And the thing is, the curve is changing the whole time. So like just today, I was writing an email. I think I said to you, so is it okay to say guys, like, hey guys? And I think it's not. Like, so for me, like, I'm still
like addressing a group of people.
Yeah.
And saying, hey guys.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, it's an evolving like moment for me to try to catch up.
Mm.
And I feel like I'm further behind that because I have much more history of some of the stuff that was appropriate back in the day that's hugely not appropriate now. So I have to like whitewash that stuff as I keep going, being like, nope, nope, yeah. Nope, nope. And then even people further back, you know, the generation behind us, like say Nana's generation or, you know, people that are in their 70s or 80s or whatever, even more, like they've got more work to do if they're interested in doing it. So
yeah,
these conversations though are hugely important. Like, for you to just get perspective of situations and of angles that you haven't had before. So the Louis C.K. thing, I think, is a good example. Like, I get it. I think I was equating like physical harm as being more harmful than emotional harm. And you're saying that, no, actually there's emotional harm that's every bit is harmful. And I get it.
And
so,
dude, it's the same kind of thing, dude. You can think about this. Someone can tie you to a chair and torture you physically, but they can also torture you mentally. You know, there's ways to torture people mentally in terms of, you know, fucking CIA do it all the time. They play loud music and flash lights on, and then they turn it off, lull you into like a sleep, and then they turn it back on and like blast you for hours until you're mentally unable to cope. And I think as much as that is something that's extreme with the CIA, when you bring that down to just a human level on just like day-to-day life, you can mentally put pressure, you can mentally hurt someone through physical acts, through physical displays, through conversations, and you can do it on purpose and you can do it by accident. Like, there's definitely times I know where I've said something to someone and hurt their feelings, and I'm like, I didn't even mean it like that. I don't even, like, I don't know.
Like, I didn't even realize that just hurt you.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, exactly. And in some cases, some people won't even address it with you and they'll walk away and they'll go, you know, whatever. Like, I'm going to just sit on that, you know? And that's what I mean, dude, is there's this thing that, like, and again, like, it's something that we all need to be conscious of, is how, and I think, as much as I say, I really respect my girlfriend Nikki for this, is she's very measured with how she talks to people. There's very few times in her life where she isn't measuring how she discusses and converses with people. Like, she thinks about what she says before she says it, whether it's going to offend someone. She thinks about what that will do to her own honor, I guess, and her own, like, rapport with the person and all that kind of stuff and their relationship. She's very measured, and I'm not. I never have been. I'm very cavalier with usually what I say to people and just going balls deep with my opinion in terms of,
like... I think you just did it just there. Balls deep, I don't think you can say that.
No, exactly. Exactly. You know, and that's my point, is you need to be able to measure it, and in the society that we're in, it's something that we all need to work on, and it's something that I am constantly working on, especially, like I said, living with Nikki, who's very measured in that kind of way. It's something that, like you just said, you know, with our example of the Louis C.K. thing that just happened between us, you know.
Totally.
Something that you need to work on, that shit, the shit that mom says, like, we all need to work on it. And I think it's definitely something for all of us to learn and try and progress from, because, again, the thing that I am loving to see through social media and things like this at the moment is how many people are sharing their story and being like, you know, this affected me, and I'm out here telling you that it's okay. Like, if I got through it, so can you. Talk to me.
Yeah.
Like, I have so many of just my friends who have converted into people who, you know, I have people who are health and well-being people on Instagram and stuff who both do workouts but also do a lot of mental health stuff. Also, I've friends, like a friend within the trans community who is who's, you know, doing some amazing stuff and also constantly posting about, you know, this is reasons for this is that. I have, you know, and I love the fact that these people are out doing that. Don't get me wrong, after a while I like different content, which is why I then sift through different stuff, but that's my prerogative. But at the end of the day, I appreciate that people are starting to share their stories and starting to go, you know, this has happened to me. If this has happened to you, let's talk about it. Let's share that. If you've had these mental issues or you've had these physical problems or whatever, especially, you know, within the Black community at the moment, it's such a prevalent issue, especially right now in 2020, you know. I have loads of my Black friends are very vocal, very active, very, you know.
In a way that you're just like, wow, like I knew it was bad, but I didn't really know it was that bad. Like, you know, I think there was some statistic of 1 out of every 4 Black people in America have had an incident. You know, something staggering that you're like, really? Was it like, I knew it was like not great, but that's just...
And you know what? That's on us as white people to have to learn that shit, because if we don't, no one's going to teach us. We don't get exposed to that, especially as white men on an even further kind of level. You and me are in a very advantageous position in life, but not one in terms of education and not one in terms of learning, because white people are very sheltered. Like, for example, I talk about this all the time. It shocked me so much when I went to India, actually. We walked around and we learned a lot from museums and things like that. And I remember recollecting what I learned in history about the English invasion and empire and time within India, and it was so downplayed, it was so downtrodden, it was so, you know, white English spruced up, you know, like
whitewashed.
Yeah. And I go to India and I find out that it was a massacre, that the English killed, you know, it was Holocaust level of, you know, like, it's as bad as the stuff that happened in Vietnam. It's as bad as any of those examples. And to me, it blew my mind that I went to this very white school, and it was a, you know, we had a couple of Black kids, and the history that was taught was exceedingly white and exceedingly pro-Britain. And then going and learning that the truth was far from that, was a big eye-opener for me in terms of being like, wow, in terms of us being white people, we are very sheltered. And it's our job to actually go out of our way to learn that kind of shit. And I guess that's a big part of why I have enjoyed traveling a lot and learning about cultures that are far from my own. You know, especially, you know, in India, especially in China, you know, it's a complete shift from where we are in the Western world. Obviously, further in the Middle East, it's even more of a different direction, you know, and it's, you know, Russia's in even different direction and so on and so forth. And I think that's the thing, is that as the people that we are, and I think it's important for you and me to address this within our own lives, we need to be part of that change. We need to be the ones that are dealing with that. You know, for example, you know, it needs to be something, I'm not going to give an example, it's fucking stupid, I'm not going to do that. But we need to be on top of it. We need to be actively addressing that in public. We need to be actively having conversations like we just did about Louis C.K.
Yeah.
Where, you know, we make each other realize what is going on. And don't get me wrong, there's times where you and me will have a conversation that doesn't go that well, and then someone else will tell one of us that we've got to, we need to change that.
Yeah.
And then we've, you know, come back to each other and been like, yo, that's actually something we need to work on and something that we need to adjust.
Yeah, and it's cool. Like, I mean, the theme of this podcast is we're a father and a son. We're two generations apart. We have a lot of
differing opinions.
Differing opinions, completely understandably different history, but a vested interest to, like, make it all work, like, in a deep way. And that's hard to do sometimes, and I've seen loads of people that really struggle with that. But that's, I mean, that's part of this thing, you know. It's part of us, you know, having guests on that we're looking at from different perspectives and enjoying that process. So this whole thing has been, you know, really, in one way, super, super entertaining. But in another way, like, there's elements of this, of these conversations that are really important to, I think, to us, you know, as in our relationship, but also to us individually on how we look at the world. But I don't think you believe, still to this day, that I have some of my best friends from high school were Gomer Watts and Homer Baker. You don't believe that, do you?
Well, yeah, exactly. but yeah, no, I think it's a weird one at the moment, though.
Gomer, if you're watching, man, fam.
but yeah, no, I think it's a weird time that we're in, and I think especially, you know, actually over lockdown, I've grown a lot more in terms of just because of the amount of time I've had to look into things and to read about stuff and to do all this different stuff. So I think over lockdown, I've definitely feel like I've progressed in that a little bit more, and actually having a lot of active conversations with Nick's about things like that, because we've just been spending days together. You know, there's often a lot of debates and conversations that we do have about that kind of stuff. What I wanted to actually kind of follow into that with was, lockdown's been obviously a weird one for everyone, and like coming out of lockdown specifically, rather than, I'll leave coronavirus as a whole out of this, but lockdown specifically, it's a hard one mentally, personally, but it's also a really hard one on relationships. And something I wanted to discuss was relationships coming out of lockdown and what happened and what you kind of learned, what I maybe kind of learned, and go into that a bit. So what do you kind of, is there anything that you felt you and Mum have taken away from lockdown that either progressed anything or changed anything or made anything better or worse?
Yeah, so there's a couple different ways to go here. One is I would compartmentalize lockdown into early lockdown and late lockdown. Because early lockdown was like quite, it was just very, very new, and the unknown was huge. And you almost started like circling your wagons, and you're like, okay, if this goes bad, like, you know, you start game planning a little bit, like this could get really, really bad. And it can still, but to some degree, we're starting to slowly acclimate to it, and we're starting understanding how this is going to probably play out. But during that circling your wagons part, it was really interesting to find who you were talking to and like who it was important to touch base with, whether it was within your own family. Because, you know, we have our immediate family, and we have our extended family, and then our family kind of goes out further and further. And, you know, there's still people in our family that we haven't talked to during lockdown, and there's people in our family that we talk to more than once a day, right? And same thing with like friends. Like, there's certain friends that you'd be like, before lockdown, you'd be like, oh yeah, that's that, you know, that person is going to be like on my, you know, my raft, the raft that can only hold like six people. That person's definitely on my raft, right? Mm. And to some degree, you haven't reached out to them much, if at all. And then you start questioning, like, okay, so what's the criteria for me having decided, like, who I'm going to circle, who's going to be my contact points during that early part of lockdown? So that was really interesting for me to find out, and I was surprised by some of the people I was talking to more to than others. Mm-hmm. And I would say that it's not just, like, proximity, just because they were close to me, that's why I was talking to them. I would say subconsciously I was making decisions on who I was talking to and who I wasn't talking to. And some of those decisions were really surprising on friends that I thought I'd be talking to that I wasn't. And, other people that I was. So that's one thing. Do you want to jump in on just that point? And then I'll go to the second point about Myanmar.
On that point, yeah, dude, I think I've always been a lot more clear on that. Just so people know about me, I'm terrible at responding to people. Like, I just don't respond to messages. I'm very aloof in terms of messaging, like, friends and things like that. And I'm not the best at it. I mentioned it before. And I think I mentioned it with Ella Joy when we were talking to her. And I think, for me, the thing is that, you know, messaging people is always really hard. But yes, I do have a core group of people that I've definitely found out, especially over lockdown, who I message constantly, who I am in contact with more regularly, who through the years have lasted the test of time. And I think that's something that is important for everyone to kind of, you know, I guess, think about in some ways is, you know, does, you know, I guess, has lockdown given you guys any insight? You know, do you guys know a bit clearer about that close group of friends? Are they people that you did contact a lot more? Are there people that you didn't contact? Are there people that you avoided contacting? Are there people that you were like, oh, I need to speak to them, irregardless? You know?
What about the people that you're like, I need to speak to them, but I really don't want to right now. I'm just tired. It's been a long day, but I really got to put that call in. Mm. Like, that's almost a feeling of guilt that you're like, and you know, you have that with some people that you love a lot. And then you have to evaluate all these feelings that you have, and it makes you reconsider, okay, well, what is a close relationship and why is it close? Mm. And what are my responsibilities for that relationship? So yeah, it's been a really interesting process, that bit. Yeah. As far as me and Mom, it's been like, you know, I've told you guys many times, I've trained my whole life for lockdown.
It's true.
Like, I'm a hard introvert. I'm super happy just being in the house, just chugging along at a project, whatever. And I am not very social, so very much like you. The friends that I have been so gracious in giving me the free enough leash so that I don't burn bridges by not contacting them, that they just accept, well, that's just Tom. And when we are together, it's great. And then we might not be together for a while. So I'm a pretty mediocre friend in that way. But for Mom and I, it's been a really great time for us to cut through all the shit, cut through all the busyness, and just like be with each other and evaluate how that feels. And it's been cool. Like, we have, you know, we have our routine that we do. We have our little cute things that we do. We have things that we look forward to. So tomorrow is like, we've discovered this little like fish and chip shop that we now have been doing for like the last 4 or 5 weeks. We go and get just an order of chips. And
just for people who are American, chips in England are French fries. French fries. Like really chunky French fries with some fish, but obviously not fish because they're veggie.
Yeah. And so that has been like almost this like time of renaissance for us to be like, yeah, we actually really, really love spending time together. Mm. And like most of the time, like everyone, we stress out and we have little moments where we get pissed off and stuff like that. But for the most part, we're just like two like little naughty kids, like just like, you know, just like getting in trouble in a friendly way with each other. And then like with the rest of the world, we're just like, conniving about, you know, having little secrets with each other. And I mean, we love it. It's been the culmination of a lot of investment into a relationship. And here we are like 30 years in, really just enjoying our time together. So I can't
at all, like, underestimate how awesome that's been.
Mm. Yeah, I would say.
Or overestimate.
You know, dude, that's awesome to hear, I guess. You know, in terms of, you know, the progression for you guys and your relationship, I think that's a pretty badass one for you guys. I think, yeah, you know, I don't know, lockdown's weird. I think it's been nice watching actually you guys do your, like, Sherlock Holmes game and stuff like that, and it's been nice, you know, being able to drop in with you guys and have a bit of a chat about this and a bit chat about that, and, you know, be a part of that in a bit of a different way, because we've had so much time together, I've caught you guys doing things that I usually wouldn't catch you guys doing, like hanging out on, you know, the balcony, you know, watching the sunset together, or, you know, you making a coffee for mum in the morning and having breakfast in bed and things like that. So that's been a nice one for me. I think, yeah, dude, I think it's cool to hear that you guys are in that kind of headspace. It's nice for me, at least, in the, you know, I think it'd be, again, interesting for other people to reflect on, you know, how that time has been for them, if they are in a relationship, whether you are with that person or not. We were both fortunate enough that we were with that person the entire time. For me, on my end, it was also a beneficial time. Like, a lot of people struggle during that time in relationships, but don't get me wrong, we had some big-ass arguments, some big debates about some stuff, but also we had a lot of really beautiful moments, a lot of really great memories, and it will be hilarious to remember that we always were in lockdown together. You know, that was that's who did you spend lockdown with will be something that will be said around the world for years to come. And, you know, it's cool that it's that person, I guess, is something that I would be honest. And I'm really happy with the amount of progress we made within understanding each other, refining communication that we, you know, and it's like relationships are like waves, you know, it goes ups and downs and you're working hard on it and then you kind of take your foot off the gas pedal and then you work hard on it and then, you know, it goes up and down. So I think refining it for us in some ways, the communication and the, like, I guess the energy for each other that we had when we were traveling after coming back and struggling through, you know, having lots of mortality within the family, having lots of time with the grandmas, then finding work and, you know, this and that. And I think we kind of lost a bit of that while we were jumbling with dealing with all the different stuff going on. So then refining a lot of that while we were in lockdown was really nice. It was really cool. And it was great. And I think coming out of it, it's been a really awesome thing to see how we now deal with the work schedule that we've got ahead with us, how we deal with, you know, the problems that are coming our way, how we're also dealing with, you know, the fact that we want to make the small amount of time that we have now that we are working versus lockdown even better, because it's like, you know, before in lockdown, oh, you know, we can argue for like a couple hours in a day if it was, you know, a random day and we're having an argument for some reason because we're just spending all the time together. But now, if we have an argument, we lose a whole evening, we lose a whole morning, we lose a whole day in some cases, and because Nikki's working all day or I was working in the evenings and blah, blah, blah. So I guess it, for me, it was a big part of now as we operate is all about, you know, making the most of these smaller moments of time that we have together even more than we were before. And we were loads before, but it's even more so than that now, which is pretty damn cool.
Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah.
So that's been a pretty nice one in terms of lockdown and shit.
I got a good one.
Go for it.
All right. So if you're able to do a Freaky Friday with...
Oh my God, what a fucking segue. Go on.
With your favorite skater.
Oh, okay.
But no, here's the thing. It's not exactly Freaky Friday. You get to hang out with them. But you also get to assume their whole repertoire of tricks. And I get to do it with my favorite basketball player.
Okay. Like,
who is the skater? Why would you want to hang out with them? Is it, and you need to separate it out on their personality and their assets, their tricks that they have. And which would you be what would you be looking most favorable towards?
Can I give you two different answers?
Yeah.
I'll give you one. If I were to assume another human being, as in like assume their body in Freaky Friday for real, like Lindsay Lohan style, I would choose Boo Johnson because of his work ethic, his skating ability, also his, like, I love what his company stands for, Just Have Fun, I think is absolutely amazing. I think A bunch of other little things in terms of just, he seems like a very genuine person. When I've met him in person, he's been awesome with me. He's been really nice, really respectful. Has actually appreciated that I enjoyed like some of his earlier skate videos and things like that. So I think Boo Johnson would probably be the person that I would become for those reasons.
He's so chill, isn't he? Yeah. It seems like he just has fun out there as well. Like, yeah. He just has fun.
Like, literally, yeah. He just has some fun. And I fully agree. And I would say, also, he's a very clean living. He works out. He cycles. He swims in the morning. He does yoga. Like, he's very, very, like, dedicated to his health and things like that, which I really appreciate as well. Not that I am, but that I would like to be. I would say if I had a choice of being, hanging out with them and taking on their skill set as well,
yeah,
while I spend time with them, I don't think I would want to, because I would want to be dazzled by their skill set and me not do it because it's them. If I was separate from them, though, okay, then separate. I would want their skill set. So, in terms of that,
You're in a competition. You're in the finals of the SL. No, let's say you're just cruising around, and it's a competition of just anything goes. So you could do SLS type tricks, but you could also just do some stuff off of.
I mean, Andy Anderson is such an incredible skater. He's a Canadian guy. I actually met someone who grew up in the village in Canada with Andy when I was in India. Actually, I met a dude at a hostel who knows Andy and grew up with him as a kid, going to the same high school and stuff. But he's a phenomenal skateboarder. He's super inventive. He does a lot of freestyle skating within street skating.
Mm.
So, you know, at the barracks, he did a dream trick, which was, I think, like a, what was it? It was like a ollie into nata spin. 50-50, so like ollies onto the edge of a rail, does a nata spin on the edge of the rail, then 50-50s down the rail, and impossibles out of the 50-50. And you're like, those tricks together should not be able to be combined. And the style that you just did that with is insane. So I guess maybe Andy Anderson, Richie Jackson, again, someone who's more creative. For me, here's the thing is, I would love to say one of like the pro stompers, like, you know, a Chris Jocelyn or a Luan Oliveira or people like that, because they're absolute demons with the technical. Yeah, and like Felipe Gustavo and Gustavo Riviera.
These technicians, and,
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Or Niger, whatever.
Exactly. They're incredible. And I would love to be able to do that, but truthfully, I love style in skating.
What about Evan, dude? Where's Evan, he fit?
Dude, oh, hell yeah. Evan Smith is right in that group of people that I was about to mention. Like, Evan Smith, fucking William Spencer... you know, Jason Park, Geiger.
What about homie from Florida that did the blonde-haired guy? Cause I don't know why I'm forgetting him. He was heavy for a while.
Jimmy Foy,
yeah.
Again, he's more of the traditional, like, is don't he? Get me wrong. He's
he
got
used
style.
To, didn't he used he, to be, like, a little bit more, like,
he's got
banging around?
He's got style in his rails. Like, he is, his style is that his rails are immaculate. He can hit any rail when it's large rails and
it's clean,
and he's butter as fuck, you know. For me though, like, I like to see, what I mean by style is something that makes me go, oh, that was dirty. Yeah. Like, that is exactly the reaction I want when I, like, when a trick is really tweaked, or when, you know, again, like, I love things that break the mold of traditional skating. Like, when someone, I watched the other day, someone do a, like, board slide down a rail, and they, like, grab the rail, stop themselves for a second, then, like, pop up, do a body varial, and keep going backwards.
Mm.
And it was like, again, like, I just love the difference in coming up with something weird and creative, which is why, I love doing bonelesses and things like that myself, that are just not the standard kind of shit that people are doing, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I'm a big fan of people like that. So, I'd maybe choose a more fringier skater, someone like Johnny Geiger or Richie Jackson or, you know, someone like that.
Nice.
Probably would be my answer. What about you? Would it be basketball? Would basketball be your sport?
I think, I was thinking about it. Like, I think it would be basketball, because that's the thing I know most about in my life, I guess. And I think so I was thinking about it. It was interesting. I bounced around between, like, old school and new school, and even within new school, like, would I want to be Steph Curry for a day and just have that incredible range? But not just the range. Dude, his handle is ridiculous. His vision is ridiculous. Never misses a free throw. Is a really good dude. So that would be one level of just, like, skill that I would find fascinating. But then the other is, like, Russell Westbrook. Like, would you just want to have, like,
the wheels to just blow past someone and elevate over someone and just out-athletic the hell out of people.
D-Rose before he blew out his ACL.
D-Rose, yeah. Just like do things that change the game of basketball into this other thing. It makes it almost into like, a, I don't know, like into this other magnificent like expression of athletic, you know, ability.
Prowess.
Yeah. So, yeah, somewhere in there, I guess. I guess if I were to really hang my hat on it, as much as he's current and I'm probably like, you know, pushing aside, and even like Michael, that's, you know, it'd be tough to pass that up, like being Michael in a game and like just having that
ability.
Yeah, and that just that will and that drive and that dominance and like just being able to look at the other team and say, you know, like we literally know we're going to win tonight. And them also say, you know what, when push comes to shove, we kind of know you're going to win as well. You're going to win as well. Like having that feeling would be really interesting. But I go with Steph because I just think he's a cool guy. He seems like a really genuine guy. So that's part of it. And dude, come on. Like his release, his range. And I do not underestimate his handle, dude. His handle is sick. Like, so that would be just, I don't know, like it's probably the same feeling that you have with skateboarding. It's like, I don't even know if I can understand what that would feel like, because it's so, you know, it's so foreign to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I feel you. Yeah. I get you. Like it's, and again, yeah, I think, I was thinking as well, like, who is there anyone else outside of sports that I would like fully adopt their skill set? Like just fully like be like, yep, I'm good. Like I would fully adopt your full set of skills. Maybe some very incredible business mind, like actually was someone that I was thinking.
Like Elon?
Yeah, like maybe someone like that, or someone who is just very creatively like inclined was another thought, like a you know, a Quentin Tarantino, a Spike Lee, a fucking John Frusciante, you know,
Frush,
Jimi Hendrix.
You're on the list. You're on our El Dorado list, so
yeah.
We're coming.
But yeah. Exactly. Like to me, I don't know. There's definitely some people out there that I would love to.
What about being like an incredible stand-up comic that had the skills to improv, like on stage? You know, you're dealing with hecklers, but you're also just bouncing around based on where the crowd is taking you, just like having fun, like in the moment.
Dude, I don't know about stand-up, dude. It's such a brutal. Like, if you could jump in at like Chappelle level.
Yeah, exactly. That's like, what I mean. Like, if you could embody someone's skill set.
If you could jump in at the top, yeah. But if you had to go through the work.
No,
fuck
I just
no,
mean,
dude.
No, you're stepping on stage and you are fully evolved in that person's skill set.
That'd be cool.
Crazy, right?
I mean, like, yeah, I guess also, like, how much you want people to fucking laugh at you is the real question. You know, like, how much, like, to me, again, stand-up comedy is cool, but also I would, like, I don't know, I find more richness from some sort of, weirdly enough, a dexterous act. Like, I said business or something like that, but maybe something where there's some sort of dexterity involved. Again, I always like the idea of an actual physical skill that someone can do. Like, I don't know why blacksmithing is really interesting to me.
Oh, like a genius at a trade. Like like a master.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like
someone like, well, you know, a chef that's just like right in the
Gordon
flow.
Gordon fucking Ramsay, dude. Yeah. Like to know that many different uses of the F word would be spectacular. Like, no, I think Gordon Ramsay would be really cool. There's some other weird chefs, like Heston Blumenthal is such a weird, strange, creative dude that I think he'd be very interesting.
Your point, though, is like you could do it, you could just pretty much do it with anything, like being a mechanic that's in the flow underneath a car, even like someone that's a high level, like, I don't know, performance mechanic of a race car and just like tweaking shit. And like, it just, I guess it comes to mastery, right?
Yeah.
Anyone that's a master at something is really interesting and enjoyable to watch them having conquered like a thing. Like there's still room to evolve, but they're standing at the top of a huge like journey of understanding, of learning, and of becoming really, really good at something. That's really like it's so
admirable.
It's so admirable. Yeah.
Admirable, admirable, both.
That's what I was going to ask you.
No, they're two different words. They mean different things.
No, I think it's the same word.
Really?
Yeah.
Admirable, admirable?
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah, I guess so. Fuck it. We were talking about this yesterday. We were talking about how... was it me and you talking about it? Or was it me and Nick?
I think it was you and
Nick. Oh, okay. So me and Nick were talking about how when different people say things different ways because they've never actually heard it said a different way. Like, I can't remember what it was. Nikki said something the other day.
Was it caramel?
That's an example of, like, one that I said for years. Like, I would say, yeah, like, caramel and, like, I don't know, like, data. I always said data.
Yeah.
Obviously, as an American, data is correct. But in England, it's... No. In England, it's data. In America, it's data.
Data, yeah.
Yeah. So I used to say data, and now since I've come to the UK, I now say data. Because
I've switched
it's the
some of mine
one.
As well. But I'll tell you what, if you really want the pronunciation of caramel or caramel to be delivered in a way that you just will admire forever, look up Charles Barkley. Say caramel. It is a thing of beauty.
I just think, I don't know, it's so weird that we as humans, like, you don't hear some. I was watching a Bert Kreischer and Tom Segura podcast the other day, Two Bears, One Cave, and Bert says nightmare. and Tom's like, what? He's like, nightmare. Nightmere. And they're like, what? They're like, you do realize it is a nightmare, right? Like, and he's like, no. And then he's like, holy shit, I've been saying that wrong for my entire life.
Yeah.
And you're like, that kind of thing is very interesting as humans as well, that you can be so unexposed to something for such a long period of time that you, and then when someone corrects you, you're like, wow, that was basic.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was super fucking basic. I should have known that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know some from when I was younger, when you were younger as well, but, like, I'm not trying to think of any that have been late in life, things that I've been like, wow, I have had that wrong, like, for 40 years.
Oh, I know one that you and me both realized in the last couple years. And this is less of a said thing, but more of a realized thing, is that peppers that are different colors are actually different ripenesses, not different types of pepper.
Did not know.
Like, this is my point. It's just,
and mom who's known for literally, like, the whole time she's known both of us,
yeah,
has known that fact, and for some reason that knowledge was never transferred to us, like,
exactly,
in just a casual way, like in the kitchen or topping.
Isn't that weird?
So weird
that, like, we were just, that was just aloof, like, the whole time, and it was right there. Like, this is the, and just so people understand, Tracy's, my mum's a chef, so there, it's very weird that we wouldn't know that. Like, as people who live with a chef, we should know more stuff about cooking.
And enjoy a lot of stuff she makes with awesome peppers in it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, I don't know, I think it's definitely an interesting one of how humans evolve through their own lives in, and it's very much a, what's written for you in genes, and then what you experience through your environment. I think environmental exposure is a big part of how we then progress as people. Do you know what I mean?
I totally do, yeah. And that's a whole interesting thing about, you know, like, if you adopted a kid, like, how much would they be like you?
Yeah.
That's a really interesting question.
Yeah. That's a very interesting question.
Yeah. And I think to some degree, a lot, there's aspects they'd be a lot like you because they're just modeling stuff.
I think it
that
depends how young they are.
Yeah.
It depends on how, like, absorbent their brains are.
Yeah. Like if they're like 22 and you adopted them, then.
Well, no, I mean, like, yeah, if they're like in their teens, it's a whole different being because
they've had
exposure. Like, apparently it's the first 3 years that are very important in terms of environmental exposure. I think it's the first 3 years, if I remember correctly, that are, like, super, super important. But even then...
I think it's, like, even then, like, after 8 years, it's pretty much, like, the script has been written.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you're going to have, like, some pre-programmed stuff in there.
Like, hardwired.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is... It's weird that we as humans, again, function like that, but it's also super interesting that we operate in such a way that we learn from the environment. And again, it's funny, people say, you know, oh, I learned something, and yeah, everyone's so afraid of failure, but the only way that you can learn is by someone else fucking up and you seeing that, or you fucking up and seeing that that was not the right way to do something, or the correct way to pronounce something, or the correct knowledge about peppers, you know. To my point being that, you know, it's interesting that
it's one of your favorite sayings, isn't it?
Everything comes through failure in terms of our knowledge base, even down to our existence as individual humans. You will learn your things in the early years of your life through environmental exposure, through outside, you know, exposure. And that comes down to just that, Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and also the really important thing is to accept that, and because some people really don't, and failure can be a blocker.
Yeah.
Right? And if you don't embrace the fact that failure is like possibly the main part of becoming really good at something, then it's a huge blocker for you to be good at anything. Like, because then you cut and run too early, right? Mm. You need to go through those hard times. You need to go through, like, literally getting it wrong over and over and over and over again, and withstand that, first of all, that, like, pain of failing, but also just contextualizing in a way that that's just part of the process. And then somehow enjoying it at some point, like putting it in its right, proper place, which is, that's a learning moment.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think, you know, in terms of learn, like, that's a big part of, you know, and this is what I mean, is it's interesting as well that you don't have to fail. You can also learn from other people's failures, which is both a weird but interesting one as well, because someone else can fuck up and you can go, oh, wait, he fucked up like that, so I'm not going to do that because that doesn't seem like a good idea, kind of thing. And it's interesting that through both it happening to you or you doing it, and also it happening around you, you know, you can then make those decisions. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's the whole, like, there's science that shows that the human brain cannot discern from actually doing a repetition of something to vividly imagining you're doing a repetition of that thing. So the human brain starts, if you're really good at visualizing things, you can actually get repetitions that your brain will take as learning. So I'll give you an example. Wayne Rooney, who, you know, for those of you that aren't from the UK, was a really good football player. He played actually in the US for his last year or something like that. But really good football player, played at Man United and then off to other places afterwards. His pregame ritual was to ask the equipment manager to find out what kit they were wearing, because, you know, Man United has like 50 kits, right?
Yeah.
What kit they were wearing, like literally the color and the pattern of the kit, so he could visualize the game the night before and actually see himself literally running through the whole game, like corner kicks, different aspects of, you know, going one-to-one with people and, you know, shots on goal and all this other stuff. And he said it was a huge part of his, like, his process of getting to where he was, that visualization thing. And also, like, you know, you see it in a whole bunch of different examples. You know, Steve Nash, when he shoots a free throw, before he shoots a free throw, he shoots an imaginary free throw. Like, he'll just literally go up and shoot that imaginary free throw.
I do it with skating.
Yeah.
I do it with skating in terms of, in my head, picturing, like, the pop and the flick, or, like, you know, the rotation of my body. And, you know, I'll even, like, wind my arms up and picture that I'm going to be, like, and, like, think. So, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it's weird that you can almost trick yourself into thinking you did the repetition in some ways by having that mental power. We as beings are very interesting sacks of meat.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's some very interesting science going on with that, even in of itself, that we've just talked about. A good one.
Yeah.
I think we'll come to an end, guys. It's been about hour and 40.
Has it been an hour and 40?
Just about.
Been chilling. Yeah.
This has been a great one.
The Femi's been holding up its part of the bargain. We were very unsure. Let's see how it looks. But
yeah.
We'll
see what's up. But thanks, guys, for joining us on this one. I was thinking I'll walk over and give you another look at the view quickly before
we... Let's do that now while we're talking.
Yeah, and we'll end you with the view. Here, pass me this. All right. But guys, thank you so much for walking and talking with us.
We call it a walking podcast, but it's more like a walking and sitting on our asses podcast for aspects of it. But yeah.
All right, let's go down. One second, guys. This is just down here. I'm going to go to this little crack in the fence so you guys can see this beautiful view that we've just been looking at for the last little bit here.
Is it politically incorrect to say my ass is numb?
My ass is also numb from sitting on that. So this is our lovely city of Bristol, guys. As you can see, it's in like a little lovely basin. It's really, really nice.